of home were burning brightly when I left so long ago.
You're listening to Can't Do Nothing With Love, an award-winning short story collection written and read by Ellen Morris Pruitt. Today's episode features Full Moon Walk. The Talbot girls live with their mom in newly sophisticated Oxford, Mississippi, not two blocks from downtown. But little Mariamna and Gertie can tag a ripe persimmon. They know when blackberries are sweet to the tongue. Mariamna, who is my only sister, buys the girls shoes on sale at the Walmart, but they will lecture you on the dangers of bare feet and ringworm, rusty nails and lockjaw. And most important, once a month, the girls follow their mama on a full moon hike around the courthouse square. While Mariamna recites, little Mariamna and Gertie march right behind, curving past the art gallery and the burger joint, spinning around the courthouse, listening to stories about our ancestors, long dead and strange even when alive. Those strange ancestors are these girls' relatives, Susanna, and not all of them are dead, so you better be careful what you say. The girls would listen to perfectly divine stories of their perfectly normal family, tromping in the moonlight, led by their mom. Mariamna's husband was no impediment to her child-rearing decisions. Billy Talbert had allowed his wife to do the raising ever since he flipped his tractor while pulling stumps from the ground. The accident didn't kill him, but it broke his pelvis and scared him about the end of life, so he took off cross-country and returned with a Mexican woman who understood his panic. Now the two of them live in a shotgun shack out from Taylorsville, and Billy only shows up to sign official forms the girls bring home from school. He crushed his big toe. Francina was his physical therapist, helping him to learn to walk again without the big toe. You know that. Billy Talbert ruined his foot and shacked up with his new squeeze, Francina. It doesn't matter. It was the girls who were starting to present a problem. Time was, I'd be down for a visit, all of us sitting around on the front porch shelling peas, bought from the farmer's market for the sole purpose of being shelled on the front porch, when one or the other of the girls would start talking about dirt. Little M.A. would claim black dirt as the best. Loamy, she'd say, while peas popped into her stainless steel bowl. Gertie would correct her. No, Aunt Susanna, red dirt with sand because it sifted better, she'd say. Then they'd get into a squabble over tan, slimy clay made with the garden hose, while Mariamna slit the seam of the pea pod with her thumbnail, scraping the line of peas free from the clinging flesh. Unusual conversation, a little unpleasant, still tolerable. But little M.A. is 12 now, and while Gertie is only 8, she watches her sister's rebellion and apes it just like a monkey at the zoo. Calling your niece a monkey at the zoo. Well, Gert, how does that make you feel? And what's wrong with shelling peas? Doing something deliberate, thoughtful doesn't count. You ate them when I cooked them, I seem to recall. And we'd all sit down to a delicious Sunday dinner cooked by Mariamna. No, the problem wasn't teenage rebellion, rejection of their mother's world. It wasn't overwrought television, or hip-hugger jeans held up by the pubic bone, or red granular candy packaged in a plastic baby bottle, waiting to be teased out with the tongue. No. The girls were bright enough to see they couldn't win that game, so they chose to simply outdo their mother. Gertie took to wearing her golden hair in Heidi braids, and last week Mariamna telephoned and said little M.A. brought a slug into the house, let it crawl across her bedroom floor all night, then in the morning painted bright purple and green and yellow blotches in between the slug's trailing silver lines. Folk art, the child said. Stained glass on wooden floor, she called it. I'm the one ties Gert's braids. Left M.A.'s picture on the floor for 3 days, too. This could hardly be considered a good development, so I invited the Talbert family, son's husband, to my home in Memphis to see if we could throw a crimp in the situation. Mariamna immediately said yes they'd come, but only when the moon was full, so we could all trot down Beale Street in its round light. That's how the three of us ended up in a bar on Beale at 9 o'clock on a Saturday night in June, waiting for our T-bone steaks to arrive. A restaurant, Susanna. Bluff's Blues is a restaurant. Well, restaurants don't have bouncers. But restaurant, bar, whatever. We hadn't been there long. Gertie dancing a hoppy Scottish dance beside our table. Little M.A. flipping a fork into the aisle like we were all at a game of mumblety peg, while Mary Amna, who was wearing a silly blue kerchief on her head, sat buttering a saltine and humming, "You are my sunshine." When a floozy woman with crinkled permed hair and red lipstick and a purple halter top switched past our table on her way to the back room, causing the two little Talberts to stop what they were doing and erupt into a riotous discussion about the Civil War and General Hooker. "You got that right, doesn't she, girls? That woman was a floozy. Fringe on her purple vest, skirt tied across her big butt, black and white cowboy boots, too. You don't like my kerchief?" I was admiring my sister's head kerchief and trying to decide if there really had been a General Hooker in the Civil War, when a scrawny man in hitching overalls lunged past the bouncer. He staggered into the aisle next to us, wagging his head from side to side like a sedated bull. The antenna of every person in the place zoomed in on the man's discontent, except for my youngest niece, who'd stepped from the table to resume her Scottish dancing. The man stopped, brought up short by Gertie's ramrod leg. "He was drunk!" When Gertie realized the man was drunk and wasn't going to step around her, my niece, brave, naive, or just as stubborn as the mule of a mother who raised her, said flatly, "I was here first." "Well, bravo for her. I was watching out for you, wasn't I, baby? Nothing bad was going to happen to you, was it?" Mary Amna, ever vigilant over her children, snapped her fingers at her daughter, but the child only said, "This is the mad washerwoman, tired of washing the Englishman's clothes." She balled her fist into the rebellion of the dance and swept her arm emphatically towards the floor. "Caught the man's pointed chin on the way down, toppled him to the ground." The man sprawled across little M.A.'s clattering fork, opened his gummy mouth, and bleated, "Patricia!" The floozy woman came switching out of the back room, her high heels clacking, fringe swinging. You grabbed Gertie by the arm, caused her to plant her foot between the man's skinny shoulder blades. Little M.A. yipped while the floozy woman stared at her man down for the count. "Baby," the woman said. Her red lipstick quivered. Oh, I love that, quivered. Her lipstick quivered. Regal, even in the midst of chaos, Mary Amna wiped her mouth with her napkin, set the cloth on the table. "Madam," she said to the floozy woman, "my children don't mean any harm. They're just full of foolishness, brought on by an absentee father living with a Mexican woman in the wilds of Mississippi." The floozy woman fingered the fringe of her purple vest. "Wilds?" she asked. Mary Amna said, "Deep in the wilds, on pastures full of spiking grass, where responsibility cannot tramp, and even the past itself is afraid to intrude. They, in effect, have no father. And you? Surely a woman with such lovely cowboy boots has a story to tell." "You're making me sound nicer than I was. Smarter, too." The woman, charmed by my velvety sister, lifted her black and white clad foot and said, "Brady's, Beaumont, Texas." Her boyfriend rose on one elbow. "Bought by me," he said, and thumped his chest. Then little M.A. nodded to Gertie, who said to the man, "Surely a man with such wonderful overhauls as yourself has a story to tell." Little M.A. leaned over, tapped the man on the shoulder. "Bleat again, for us," she said. "Well, I'm sure the girls like that part. Such wonderful overhauls as yourself. Bleat again. You girls like that part, don't you?" To the delight of the girls, the couple ended up at our table scarfing down chunks of red meat, salted French fries, and oily salad. When I excused myself to get some fresh air, no one even noticed. "You ran out! Embarrassed yourself by making Gertie stomp on the poor man's back! You ran away!" Fortunately, the moon over Beale was lovely, big and round and low down in the sky, just at the point where it turns from yellow to clear white. I thought about making a wish. Something about my sister's happiness and a plea for offerings of kindness from her treacherous, growing-up children. But then, in the middle of my wish, it occurred to me, maybe it wasn't the full moon, but the new moon you were supposed to wish on. Or the harvest moon? Blue moon? Stars are for wishes, girl. Stars are for wishes. I was puzzling this out, thinking maybe it was stars, when my sister appeared with her brood. She stopped in front of me, a toothpick wiggling between her teeth. The breeze off the river ticked at the end of her blue kerchief. I asked Mary Amna, "Is it the full moon you wish on, or the new moon?" Mary Amna removed the toothpick from her mouth, threw it on the pavement. "You take the lead," she said, "but you've got to tell about someone." So I did. I led us down Bill under the moonlight and told about Granny Durchett. Long hair plaited down her back in a thick braid, Mary Amna and I hefted in the evenings, then unbraided and stroked with a silver-backed brush, 100 loving caresses down the length of its flat weight. We'd take turns. You'd get a stroke, then me. "No, it's my turn. Give me the brush." Granny Durchett would sit there, never flinching, ignoring all the squabbling going on behind her back. That was Granny Durchett, married at 19, gray at 22, silver until the day she died. But while she was still on this earth, she would let us into her bedroom in the morning to watch her reassemble her hair, her rough, nimble fingers dividing and layering the strips, every so often her thumb running down the length and unplaiting the end, wrongly plaiting itself. Then, last thing, flipping the heavy braid over her shoulder and winding it against the back of her head, pinning it in place with wire hairpins. I loved that braid, heavy and slick like a snake's body, alive. It was a good story, the Granny Durchett story. You did good. As we walked, I talked, and when I got to the end of my story, little M.A. asked, "What's so special about that?" "She's a sight. Full of pip, aren't you, baby?" I told her Granny Durchett hadn't cut her hair since she was 6 years old. She cried so bad that day her daddy promised never again. When we buried her, her hair reached to her knees. To her knees. You smoothed Gertie's braids, pretended to tug them to the sidewalk. I don't know if the girls were subdued by the story or if they were just stuffed with T-bone steak and fries. It was the fries, that and the floozy woman. Either way, their jaws slackened, their lips parted, their eyes lost focus, seeing not moonlit Bill, but their great-grandmother in her coffin, her hair flowing in a mermaid's everlasting dream. Then the girl straightened, cried to Mary Amna, "Your turn, your turn!" Their mother, the woman who would someday be grandmother to their own children, gladly accommodated them, launching into the great Aunt Sadie story. "You're acting like you're proud of your big sister, after all." In years to come, little Mary Amna would ask to live with her dad and the Mexican woman, Francina, where she'd stand barefoot in the kitchen learning to make milk cakes. Gertie would forget the Scottish dancing so thoroughly it would be remembered only in the twitching of her toes as she thrashed in her sleep at night. As for me, I never again yanked my sister up to Memphis to teach her how to raise her own kids, because it takes a brave woman to walk through the darkness of child-rearing, and the most courageous of these yet to travel that path with the fully deliberate, bright, shining, intentional eye of the full moon. That's nice, Susanna. That's nice. Thank you. So I enjoyed that night, that moment, fleeting, destined to pass into a time remembered, when my sister traversed Beale and her children trailed behind her, blinders on, necks outstretched, hooves pounding at a full gallop, straining just to keep up with their hazel-eyed mother. I love you too, sweetie. Always have. Now everyone to bed. Kiss your Aunt Susanna goodnight. Tell her you love her. Tell her you loved her story. Thanks for listening. Full Moon Walk first appeared in print in Southern Women's Review to contribute to the Nature Conservancy, a worldwide charity preserving the lands and waters on which all life depends. Please follow the link at can'tdonothingwithlove.wordpress.com or visit nature.org. Message me on Facebook at Can't Do Nothing With Love. Our music, The Lights of Home, was written and sung by Mr. Rob Pate. Rock on, Rob.
Oh, he's the light of home. Thank you. Thank you very much.